It is time for the Frickin' Frack of Nick and Knack, Tim Luke and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys. You can find them at tqag.com. That's for Treasure Quest Appraisal Group. And I only see Tim in on the call. Good morning, Tim.
Hey, good morning.
Is Greg around?
He is. He should be there. Greg?
I no see Greg.
No see. No see him.
Well, I'll try to add as we go along here. Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, Greg joined. There he is.
Greg, you there?
I am. I had to click on join call instead of wait. It didn't ring. It just said join call.
All right. Yes. It's, once again, another major upgrade in Skype and Ville. We'll start off on a rather interesting note here. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, her signature beaded judicial collar.
Yes.
30 times more than the estimate at Bonham's.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know why anybody thinks that would be a surprise.
I know.
I mean, here's a woman who set the standard and used the court, and I think you could put a sock up worn by Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and it would sell for thousands and thousands of dollars.
I think anything that even touched her, I think, would sell for a lot of money. I see it that it sold for, what was it, something like $175,000 or $176,000.
Well, all in all, the 76 items brought in over $500,000.
Yeah.
Right.
And I bet you there's more waiting in the way.
Right. Yeah. And yes, it establishes the marketplace, but I think that it also shows that there's that desirability. I mean, this goes along, you know, that she was pretty much a rock star when it comes to the judicial. And you also have to admire, whatever side of the aisle they're drawn, you have to admire her intellect and also just her tenacity and what she's accomplished.
Now, we'll flip it over. Did you see that painting by the rapper Skepta?
No.
It Sotheby's had a sale, I think it was in about a week and a half. It brought in nearly $100,000. And it's an interesting picture. It's like, once again, it shows, I think if people are talented, whether they're rappers, whether they're guitar, if they're talented, that talent doesn't only stop there. Their ability to please people with what they do would obviously extend to possibly painting. I mean, this painting got almost $94,000 U.S. money as part of being a contemporary art auction. I don't know if you guys have seen the picture or not, but I find it appealing.
Yes, I do as well. I think that there's a lot of other influences that are in there that you see. It has kind of a folk art quality as well. Mm-hmm. But there's, I think that the piece was done really well. And I think that Sotheby's was looking at, hey, you know, they acknowledge that there is a market for items like this. And it did well. It performed well in the market.
It reminds me of some of the art that comes from the Caribbean.
Yes.
It's very reminiscent of that ilk. It's not a bad looking painting at all. I mean, it's if you look at it, it combines different things. I mean, there's graffiti. There's daily life. It's really you wonder what other things he's done. I just wonder if this is just the beginning of another career.
Well, it's also interesting, the quote from the Sotheby's individual who curated the sale. It says that basically what her name's Lisa Stevenson, she said that we're seeing the boundaries between different disciplines being blurred, And I think that that's exactly what you were saying there, Greg, is, and that's what I was saying, is that there's different influences, and you see the graffiti, and you see the kind of outsider art, and you see a little bit of folk art, you see a little bit of just all different influences in the work. And I think that that also attracts certain buyers that are looking for something that's a little bit different than what they typically see.
Yeah, and that goes to what I say. If somebody's talented in one particular area, that ingenuity and that imagination, I think, can easily transfer over to other areas.
I believe that, too, because I'm a firm believer in talent knows no bounds. And, I mean, there's just take any of the disciplines, a lot of the artists and artists, not necessarily painting artists, but just artists, performing artists, they have multiple talents. And a lot of times they concentrate on one. And let's take, for example, some of the, like Tony Bennett, for example, a brilliant performer, but he's also a very good artist.
He is a very good artist.
And, you know, people were so surprised when a lot of these Hollywood performers started doing paintings. They thought, oh, they're out of their lane. What are they doing? Well, you know, this is no different. I mean, he's not out of his lane. He's just exploring his talents.
And
I think it's very... very, you know, what's the word I'm looking for here? It's very interesting to see the different sides of somebody, especially, you know,
it's an expression.
They people think that somebody who's a rap artist is just very one dimensional. Well, Obviously that's very far from the truth.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's just the world we live in. I think, you know, more and more people aren't, years ago, artists, and I'm talking 50 years ago, were compartmentalized. They stayed in one lane. Now they don't. If somebody's got talent, they don't just necessarily stay in that one lane. Well, you know, we've talked about this over and over, but once again, Michael Jordan has done it again.
Oh, yeah.
The jersey sold for $10.1 million. It was in the 1998 finals. $10.1 million, the most expensive piece of game-worn sports memorabilia sold at the auction.
Wow.
$10.1 million.
And that's just the beginning.
Yeah.
It's only going to continue, I think. And who knew that it would get to this point? You know, he started with, what, a shoe?
And then a rookie card. There were the rookie cards, and now this is it. It's probably one of the most, you know, most iconic. But also, this is breaking all kinds of records, which is interesting.
Now, what's interesting, and I'll bring this up, and I'll pose this question to you. There's a couple of things going on in sports right now that are going to have the potential to create. For somebody in the future, something very special. One is Albert Pujols reaching for his 700th home run. Every time he hits it a home run now, he gives it away. People don't have to turn the ball over to him. But obviously, when he hits that number, that magic number, that ball is going to be worth something because there's only, I think, two other people that have hit that many home runs. And Albert Pujols has done it cleanly. And then you have the story of Aaron Judge with the Yankees going to break Babe Ruth's record and Roger Maris's 61. These are two events that are happening in baseball that sooner or later are going to affect the sports memorabilia market.
Yeah, absolutely.
Almost definitely.
Tim, when you were working at Christie's, what was the we went to the you got the plate for the copper plate.
Right. It was from the Baltimore Sun, and that was for one of the players. And I was just thinking that was not that. I don't recall, but that was the printing plate for breaking a major league baseball record.
Was that probably when they broke the game, consecutive game streak?
It was Baltimore.
Yeah.
I can't think of his name. That just shows you how much we follow sports.
Well, no, I think that it was terrible. It was the longest. He was consecutive games.
Yeah, Lou Gehrig had held the title, and he smashed it. That's exactly right.
But this, you know, the baseball in general, I think is I think these kind of records are, as time goes on, they're going to just continue to be broken. Players today are just amazing, and when you stop and think about the history, technology in sports has changed. You know, like the way the bats are made, everything has changed for the better, and it doesn't. I don't think there's any boundaries as to what's going to happen.
Greg, that was Cal Ripken.
Cal Ripken.
You know, when you talk like that, it's true, because like when you look, when Albert Pujols hits that 700th home run and he joins a very, very select club, Major League Baseball is going to want that ball. So the fan who catches it is going to get from Pujols himself, from the club, and from Major League Baseball, they're going to get a windfall, because Major League Baseball is going to want that. And if Aaron Judge gets that that 62nd home run where he tops Babe Ruth and Roger Maris for the American League. Yeah. Once again, that's a ball that Major League Baseball is going to want, and so once again, whatever fan catches that will be on the upswing. But it all goes back, I think, to Tom Brady when he retired, and that guy paid all that money for that football that. And then he unretired, and the guy's sitting there with an NFL football.
You know, speaking of that, it's just kind of dropped out of the news.
Yeah.
What's going to happen?
I think it's just going to sit there. What can the guy do? He has to hold on to it. And then hopefully 10 years down the line, because it was such a bizarre story, the football will have some value. Not the value if that was the last touchdown pass he ever threw, but it will hold some value simply because of Brady retiring, then unretiring. So I don't know if it'll hold the value of the money that he paid for it, but it will hold some value in the future.
Well, and just to give some perspective as well, so the there was a Babe Ruth baseball that sold for $700,000, and this particular baseball was a home run ball from the first in an all-star game. So something like that just gives you perspective as to what people, you know, like where things have been selling, where things are. And that was, it doesn't say when that was sold, but, you know, that is interesting because it was part of a World Series and it was the first game and it was a home run. Which pretty amazing.
Well, you know, the other thing to think about is with Aaron Judge being so, he's not at 60 yet. I think he's at either 58.
He's at 59.
Okay. Oh. So, it's possible, because there's still games left this season, that it could happen this season. But if it doesn't happen this season, and let's say he gets one, he's one short by the end of the season, it's this, the hype for this when next season starts is going to be outrageous. I mean, and I think that it's going to be one way or the other, he's going to get there.
You know,
whether it's this season or next season.
Well, you bring out a good point. First of all, when he gets to number 60 and he ties Babe Ruth, that ball's going to be worth something.
Right.
When he gets to number 61 and he ties Maris, that ball's going to be worth something. And when he gets to number 62 and he owns the record outright and for the American League, that ball will be worth something. Really? I mean, that's the way baseball works. You know, because the first ball is going to be tied to not only Judge, but Babe Ruth. The second ball is going to be tied to Judge, but also Roger Maris. And then the third ball will be Judge alone. So like there's like a triple killing going on out there waiting to happen. You got to love it. You got to love it. And by the way, right. What makes it even better, both these players are drug-free. That makes it even more of a special moment for fans right. and non-fans. I know people who know nothing about baseball, but you know what? They're following Judge and Pujols
they want to witness history.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Now, speaking about witness history, we just I know I watched portions of it. We watched the funeral procession and the burial of Queen Elizabeth II. What surprised me is when they had the video of taking her jewels and the crown out. Certain people complained. About that, how long has this tradition been going on? How long has that crown and the scepter and the jewels been around? Don't people realize exactly what a monarchy involves? I mean, I can't believe people were amazed by it.
Well, yeah. It's interesting that you mention this because I am a major Anglophile. So I not just with this monarchy, but just all the way back the history. I've always found it fascinating. And this is the first time that the public has seen this service, this part of the tradition of passing the monarchy from one monarch to another. And the fact that it was broadcast live is the first time it's happened. Now, if somebody wants to complain about that, I thought it was extremely poignant because to be able to witness history like that is, I find, and you know how I feel about history because we've talked about it in the past, but to witness this in my lifetime, it's something that I will never see again. And I found it absolutely fascinating, just the historic aspect of it, the emotional part of it set aside, but just the history of how this happened and what the traditions are leading up to crowning of a new monarch, how sorrow and joy emotions happen at the same time in this circumstances, and I just thought that it was amazing. And to those people who want to complain, it doesn't matter, they're going to complain about something anyway, so I just say, what do they say in England? Bullocks.
You know, what's funny also, you heard different commentators commenting about, well, everything is so perfect in place and an amazing job setting it up. This whole thing has been in the practice and planning stages for years and years, probably 50 years. This is something that they probably practice and planned every day.
Of course.
Well, and you know, they name the services, they name the funerals. Each monarch and each member of the royal family has a funeral. They name them after the bridges in London. So this was London Bridge. And when, interesting little trivia thing here, when the Queen died, they said London Bridge has fallen. So, and the Queen Mother, I forget what hers was, but that's also the one that they gave, because of when the Princess Diana died, they weren't expecting it, so she didn't really have a funeral plan. So they actually put into place the Queen Mother's. So there again, then the Queen Mother's, I forget what the name of hers was, but they're all designated by bridges, which I find an interesting little tidbit.
Well, let me put it this way. Like I said, whether you're for the monarchy or against the monarchy, it really was, you know, when John Kennedy died in office, and we saw the solemnness and the pageantry, when an American president passes away, whether it was Ronald Reagan or whoever, the pageantry and the honor that goes on, and this goes with the monarchy, except it's on a, when somebody's basically led a country, whether you like the monarchy or not, for 70 years. You know, I don't think anything can be too extravagant. I just don't.
No.
I think when you're honoring somebody of that stature, you honor them and you let it go.
I will tell you that the very first time I witnessed the pageantry of the British funeral was for Winston Churchill. I mean, that was televised, and some of it was. I mean, not all of it, but some of it was. But that was, I think, 1965, maybe. And it was, I was just gobsmacked then. I just couldn't figure out, how did they do this so quickly? How did they put all this together? Well, it turns out it wasn't just an overnight thing. These things are planned years in advance, and they practice them years in advance. So it's not, you know, some of this stuff, I'm sure there are some things that probably went wrong here and there, but we would never notice it, and just the people who planned it did. But just to see this pageantry and the respect, I said to Tim, I said, wouldn't it be wonderful if we gave the living the respect that we give the dead?
Well, she got the respect. That's one thing I'll say. She got the respect. And she's one thing that's held the monarchy together for all these years.
Yeah.
It was her personality. At times she made mistakes, but overall she let countries that wanted to leave the British Empire, United Kingdom, she let them do it. She let them do it with grace and class. She changed the monarchy forever, and I feel sorry for her son because she's a tough act to follow.
That's right, yeah.
I am glad, however, to see that the news did not insist on viewing or having footage on the private burial with the family. I was just kind of afraid that might happen, but I'm just glad to see that after her casket was lowered underneath the chapel, that was it.
Yeah,
because it was just a moment of privacy that I just don't think should be breached in any circumstance. So I have to give kudos to the to the news people for not insisting on that happening, and that the families said, okay, this is it, we're done. So
it was an amazing thing to witness, not only for people of Great Britain, but throughout the world. There's very few people throughout the world that carry that much stature. So very interesting to watch and to see. But it just amazed me when people were surprised about the crown and the jewels and everything like that.
They must not have watched Game of Thrones.
They must have a lack of air to the brain. These are some news anchors. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I said to myself, how foolish can these people be? This monarchy goes back not for Queen Elizabeth II. It goes back hundreds of years.
It goes back. Yes, it goes back to William the Conqueror.
I mean, my God,
it goes all the way back.
All right. Well, anyways, that's our look back at Queen Elizabeth II. And guys, what's your next week look like? A nice calm week?
Oh, no.
Well, Tim, he's traveling tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm going to California. And I'm going to Joplin, Missouri and Naples, Florida. So lots going on in the next
And
week,
I'm project
weeks.
Managing our the final phases of our renovation from an air conditioner leak.
Okay.
Well, it's been an interesting past a couple of months for us, as you know.
Yeah. Well.
So.
Well, take care and be safe, guys, and we'll speak to you next week.
Yeah. Have a great
week.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. Tim, Luke, and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack, TQAG.com on the web.